If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Welcome in, everybody, the Jacob Draft Special. The draft is officially in the books. The Eagles made their mark. They made their picks. They finished up day 3, I think, pretty strong. John, you just met with Howie. You spoke with – did you speak with every draft pick?
We did not get Ania Smith yet, and we did not get they were having a difficult, Ania Smith and somebody else, some pride. I'll think of it in a second.
I like the guard we got from Michigan, and that guy's a beast. But anyway, they wrap up day 3 pretty strong. John, what's your impressions on the day? I think we attacked a lot of, they got the running back, they got the offensive lineman. We kept talking about it. When are they going to take an offensive lineman? I think they got a home run at offensive lineman, at least it appears that way. But what's your take on the picks? We got the receiver. We got Jeremiah Trotter, which we briefly talked about earlier. What's your takeaway from today's day 3 of the draft?
I just got done talking to Howie in the post-draft press conference, and he was asked specifically about the offensive line. And, the question phrased was, would you have thought at the start of the draft you wouldn't pick an offensive lineman to the 5th round? He said, nope, not at all. It's just kind of the way the board fell, and that's what I try to impart people. I mean, yeah, they planned on getting an offensive lineman, but the board didn't fall their way, and that could be positively or negatively. In other words, the 22, the thought process coming in was probably they'd have to go up if they wanted to get Quinyon Mitchell. It didn't turn out that way. So they ended up having to go to him in day 3. And look, you're not going to get big-time prospects on day 3. You're looking, and I asked Howie, and he says it all the time, unique. He used the term unique a lot. And what you're looking for, especially on day 3, is some kind of unique trait that maybe can turn into something and explode. And he brought up the obvious examples of Jason Kelce and his athleticism as a 6th-round pick, and Jordan Mailata is just a physical freak as a 7th-round pick. Yeah. That's what you're looking for, somebody who maybe has something special, one trait that's special, and if you develop them and cultivate them correctly, maybe it turns into something spectacular. But you got to develop those kinds of guys, and they're day 3 for a reason. But I found it ironic, Dylan McMahon, the center they drafted 6th round, one spot off of where they drafted Jason Kelce, and he's known for being a great athlete. So maybe that's being a little bit too nostalgic from the Eagles. We'll see. I'm not putting that kind of pressure. He's not going to turn into Jason Kelce, but it was just kind of funny it worked out that way.
Yeah, very, really interesting. I talked about that in the quick recap I did when you were tied up in some press conferences, just about how it's, you know, Kelce retires and one pick before Kelce was taken, they take another athletic center. John, before we get into the full day, we didn't get a chance to speak after the Trotter pick. So that there was Trevor Keegan, the guard from Michigan, who I love. Obviously, you know, we are in round five, so we'll see how it plays out. But I do love the prospect of him. In round six, they took the 6 foot six wide receiver from Florida State, Johnny Wilson. And then, as you just mentioned, at 190 overall in round six, Dylan McMahon, offensive lineman, interior lineman, center, prefers center, he said in his presser, from NC State. Just give me your breakdown or what your thoughts on each of those three picks are.
Yeah, and by the way, Johnny Wilson's the other one we didn't get to talk to. Evidently, they were having a big party, his family, and everybody was excited, and it was too loud, and they couldn't put that connection together. But, yeah, the Eagles have gotten into this, and they signed a bunch of – and I asked Nick Sirianni that after the draft was over, because they brought in just a boatload of big receivers on futures deals, and they seem to like that type of player. And Johnny Wilson fits into that category as just a big framed wide receiver, 231 pounds. Yeah, but you know, a lot of teams were projecting him maybe as a tight end, and the Eagles were asked specifically about that, and they said no, he's a receiver. Yeah. He can run the whole route tree, all his production. He was pretty productive at Florida State. He started.
Yeah, and if you watch his tape, Johnny Mack, he looks – his numbers might read like he could be a tight end, but he plays the game like a wide receiver.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the Eagles said.
Yeah.
All his production comes outside the numbers. He can run the route tree, and he's going to be a receiver here, so – Any thought of him potentially moving to tight end? Never say never. I mean, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside came in back in the day, and all of a sudden it didn't work out for him. And he ultimately tried to become a tight end in Seattle, tried him a tight end. Somebody else did as well. So, and it didn't work out either way. But with Johnny Wilson, certainly the Eagles are going to start him at wide receiver. They think he's a wide receiver, and we'll see. They're very deep at that particular position, and they got deeper with a couple of draft picks today, and they need to find the one guy who can be that wide receiver three, be that slot receiver, and hopefully that's Aeneas, but, you know, you do have Paris Campbell if it isn't. And then on the outside, you have Devontae Parker as a veteran player. But you'd love to see a young kid like Johnny Wilson develop quickly, and because you'd rather have him long-term than you'd rather have Devontae Parker for one season.
Yeah, it makes sense. How does – this might be a reach, but is Johnny Wilson – let's just assume for a moment Aeneas Smith does fill that slot receiver. Is Johnny Wilson's role a potential like Julio Jones's was, where he's kind of the big body frame? You can go to him in the, you know, in the red zone if you need to, you know, at least, we obviously know who are the right wide receivers are on this team. He's not going to be a starting outside wide receiver, but is that the type of role you see him in?
No, not to start. I mean, when Julio came in last year, remember, number one, that's a Hall of Fame player, but
yeah,
he didn't have much left when he got here. And I think they were trying to find more production at that third receiver spot. And they said, you know, even though he's a big body guy, he knows and understands how to play the game. And I think they were just looking for that production and going about it a different way. I think Johnny Wilson is more of a, and you never want to think this way, obviously. And luckily, for the most part, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown have been very durable. A.J. got banged up late last season, had to miss the playoff game. But since he's been here, he's been durable. And, you don't want to think about life without those two guys. But if one of them does get injured, you want to have somebody who can play outside and be competent. And that's why Devontae Parker's here. And, you know, maybe it'll be Devontae Parker, and maybe Johnny Wilson isn't going to be ready. Because, again, we're talking about day three picks here.
Right. I mean, they're excited. All shot. They're all darts.
Yeah. I think it'll take a while. But long term, if he develops into a – we were having this discussion because, you know, we're here for basically – 72 consecutive hours, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm talking to a lot of reporters. We're having discussions back and forth. And I think one of the disconnects, we were talking about Quez Watkins specifically, because Quez, by the end, you know, fans hated him. My old partner, Jody McDonald, just couldn't bring up the name. And I'm like, and you probably heard me argue on the show. He is a successful draft choice, a very successful draft choice by NFL standards. He was a six-round pick. He played out his entire rookie contract. He was a starter at times. He was a contributor for the entire basically portion once he earned playing time. When you get that out of a six-round pick in any NFL building, that is considered a success. And Nate Gary was the other term, which is a player Eagles fans did not like and ultimately developed into a starting linebacker. That is a successful draft pick. And I think there's a disconnect and there's really a failure of understanding that type of thing. You know, Jason Kelce and Jordan Mailata, which we talked about before, how we brought them up as unique trait late round draft picks.
Those are grand slams.
Yeah, that's where I was going. Yeah, those are grand slams. Right. I mean, and that doesn't happen very often. But if you get contributors on day three, those are good picks.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Before we move into the earlier day three players, you know, Shipley and I, Smith, Jeremiah Trotter, who we briefly discussed. What do you think of that offensive guard from Michigan? I like him a lot, Johnny Mack. 23 years old. He's 6'5", 310. He was a three-year starter at Michigan, logged 37 starts. He earned an all-Big Ten in each year as a starter, and he was the team captain last year in 23, you know, when they won the national championship. I think anytime you can add a national champion, that's a good thing overall from a winning culture perspective. But from a player perspective, what do you think of him?
Yeah, he's got a lot of experience, almost all of it. I think he started 37 games at Michigan, and as you mentioned, team captain, so all that stuff. Howie mentioned there's five Red Star players amongst this class, and I'll never, you know, he wouldn't say them in public. I can guess who they are, and I'm pretty confident, but I think he's one of them as far as football IQ and everything off the field and mentality and things like that. So from that standpoint, yeah. But I mean, again, there's some limitations. There's a reason he's a fifth round pick. You don't need, he's strictly, of those 37 games, 36 started were left guard and the other one was a left tackle. So he's been a left-handed player, so to speak, his entire career. And you're looking for a right guard.
Right.
Not that he's already, you know, I asked him that question. We got to talk to him, and he's already working on that. He's working on playing center as well because he knows as a backup you're going to have versatility. So maybe he develops down the line. But I think from a football IQ standpoint and from a culture standpoint, as you mentioned, a team captain on the national champions, that's a Red Star player from the Eagles' perspective. So, is he talented enough to be more than a Jack Driscoll type? That's going to be your question. And by the way, Jack Driscoll was a successful draft pick, but I think it depends how you're going to frame this coming into the draft. And again, how he admitted. He thought he would have an offensive lineman earlier in the process. Coming into it, the goal was to sort of get somebody, to play right guard, and I don't think they accomplished that. But you can't accomplish anything, everything, and the ball, the board didn't fall that way, and instead they got tremendous depth at cornerback, which they haven't had in the past. So when something good happens, there's unintended consequences, and they haven't really gotten that guy to push Tyler Steen, or, you know, honestly, to start or potentially start on the offensive line.
Well, to your point about the development always starts now, you know, everybody thinks this is the end. This is the start for these guys. He's got Jeff Stoutland. So if that talent does exist, if that talent is within him, I think he has the best coach in the NFL, and I think many would agree with that, to pull it out of him and to move over to that right side and play. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think he's going to be able to, if not start over Tyler Steen, I think at the very least he will be a positive, competitive force for that position. Because I don't think Tyler Steen has earned undisputed right guard status. So I think it's a good thing to have.
No, he certainly hasn't. And I don't think I think now it's going to shift back to Matt Hennessy potentially pushing Tyler Steen for that right guard spot. And right. And by the way, you know, 3 years ago, he was a very good NFL player, Matt Hennessy. And then he had back-to-back injuries that essentially cost him most of two seasons. So it's a shot in the dark from a health standpoint if he's going to hold up. But, you know, that was part of the plan as well, to get somebody like Matt Hennessy at a low cost and buy low, and maybe it hits a little bit from that perspective. But yeah, I mean, and Howie, in a rare moment of being completely honest, said, yeah, I thought I'd have an offensive lineman before round five, but it just didn't fall that way.
Yeah, we all certainly thought that. Me and you certainly thought that, and there's video evidence to prove it each round or each hit we've done here for the NFL draft. John, let's go back to the start of day three. They picked up the running back, Will Shipley, from Clemson. We kind of briefly talked about him. I've been watching a little bit more. I've been reading a little bit more about him. I'm not, I guess you're throwing darts at day three here, but they are just in love with this gadget type of running back. That
red
loves
star,
to catch.
By the way, another red star guy. I got to tell
what
you.
What do you mean, Johnny Mack, when you say red star for anybody that might not know?
Well, the Eagles have a designation, a red star designation on college prospects. And what that means is they fit everything from what they want from a culture standpoint, from an off the field standpoint, and they don't give it out very often. Last year they had 13 red star players in the entire draft. Sidney Brown was one of them. It's not about upside. It's not about blue chip. It's not about the best players. It's the best, what they think the best people is. You don't have to worry about them. They're going to do all the right things. They're going to set the right tone when it comes to culture. And how he claims, he didn't say how many he had in the draft. He claims he got five, which they don't hand it out a lot. Now, I've been doing this for a long time. I have never seen a more impressive opening press conference from a young player. I have never seen it.
Wow, that's high regard right there.
Yeah, you can tell this kid's on. He's got a 4.0 grade point average, and how he spoke about that as well, and the fact that he's competitive in everything, and even academics, he wants to be better than everybody else. And that's the kind of stuff I'm talking to. Now, he's obviously not a blue chip player. I'm with you. I think the Eagles are too in love with, oh, you got to be able to catch the football out of the backfield. No, you don't, especially when you have Saquon Barkley now.
Right. And Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is the quarterback of this football team. That's not his game.
Yeah,
I don't even expect to see a lot of it from Saquon.
I talk about it all the time. And they had DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift was a really good pass receiving back in Detroit. And they didn't use him that way.
Right.
And Kenny Gainwell was so good in college at Memphis that he often played receiver as well. And they don't really utilize him to the degree they could as a pass catching back. And they keep looking for pass catching backs. I'm not saying, look, I prefer to have that guy and the Eagles template for it, and everybody else's template for it is Christian McCaffrey. Of course you'd prefer to have that guy. But if you can't have that guy and only one team can have that guy, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to find an old school running back behind this offensive line who just puts
John, give me a LeGarrette Blount. Give me a LeGarrette Blount.
That's what I've been arguing. I would just love to see, and LeGarrette, when he got here, was obviously at the end of his career. Could you imagine a 23, 24, right, 25-year-old LeGarrette Blount? And that's what I want. And you know, the kid from Notre Dame, these one-cut runners with big that can move the chains, I think they would be phenomenal behind this offensive line. But the Eagles are never going to do it because they're always looking for everything in a back and the more well-rounded guys. But from a personal standpoint, Will Shipley is so impressive. I get why they like him.
Well, that's good
to
know.
I get why they want to bring him in. But I'm with you with the pass catching stuff. I don't need it, especially don't need it with Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if Philip Rivers was here.
Have Jalen Hurts. He's a playmaker.
Yeah, maybe if Philip Rivers was here, sure. And Nick's offense, you know, had a bunch of backs that could catch the ball because that's what Philip did. Yeah, Jalen doesn't do that. So, but they'll keep looking.
We'll see how it plays out. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, all of our loyal watchers who've been tuning in with Johnny Mac and I all draft long. We appreciate you. If you guys can drop us a like, help us reach more Eagles fans, help us grow the show, help us grow the network. We appreciate it very much. We see all you guys in the chat box. John, let's move to, I know you didn't say, you said you didn't speak with wide receiver Anais Smith, but
yeah, Johnny Wilson,
after you've had some time
one
to stew on that pick. Yeah,
how yeah do you, we, how didn't, we didn't catch one? Johnny Wilson either because they were partying, evidently. Yeah, Anais Smith, I like. I think that's a good value pick. That's a guy I projected potentially as a top day three pick to the Eagles. I thought he made a lot of sense as a potential slot receiver. Plus, he's a good returner as well. And I think, you know, maybe Britton Covey's got to start worrying a little bit as a specialist because if he can handle the punt returns and be more of a high-level wide receiver, you might go in a different direction. But, I think that's a good value signing. And I think, you know, it's hard to expect things out of fifth round picks, but I expect him to push Paris Campbell. And I would be disappointed if he didn't win the job. That's probably not fair, but I don't have a lot of high hopes for Paris Campbell. We're talking about 5 years in the NFL and he's had one decent season. And I think a lot of people, what do you think is going to happen in year six? Everything's going to click. I don't believe that. So, I would love to see him win that job, and maybe that's too high of a goal.
I mean, by the standard we set earlier, that would be a drastic success for a fifth round.
Yeah. Pick. Well, no question. Starter as a fifth round pick. That'd be a home run. And again, maybe it's unfair, but I think the Eagles need something more at that position. And it's not drastic because you are so good everywhere else. But it'd be nice to have something more consistent and more competent at that spot.
Yeah, and he's a rookie. I mean, you're going to have – if he can start in year one, and you're going to have him for four seasons – in that slot role, or at least three, call it. I mean, that would be pretty tremendous. So good stuff from there. Now let's get to the fan favorite. Everybody's jacked up about this pick. I feel pretty good about it. I know he's not, we kind of talked about him earlier, before they made the pick. He's not the prototypical linebacker I think you would want to see Philly sign in terms of for the Vic Fangio scheme, but Jeremiah Trotter Jr. has landed. You spoke with him over Zoom. What did you take from him? What did you learn about him? What did you think of him as a prospect, as a player, and as a person?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, most of their day three picks, I think you see good value. And I think Trotter is certainly in that category. And a fact that I thought you could get a day three pick that could push for playing time because the Eagles are so weak at all ball linebacker, to be blunt, the weakest position of all. And I thought you could get somebody early. I was thinking more fourth round, and Trotter fell a little bit, and they were able to get him in the fifth round. But yeah, I mean, if you're talking about these day three picks, the one with the clearest path to playing time is Jeremiah Trotter Jr. No question about it.
Just based on who the Eagles have on the field or who they have on the roster right now.
Exactly. So there's going to be an opportunity for him. And he will be able to write his own story, so to speak, if he competes and plays well in the summer. Because I'm sure he's disappointed. He started this process, and there were some people saying he could sneak into the bottom of the first round. I never bought that, but there were a lot of people early in the process that thought he might be a second round pick, and certainly a day two pick going by the end of the third round. And as the process went on, you know, the more scouts I talked to, it was pretty clear he wasn't going to be a day two pick. And then he falls from the fourth round and he lands in Philadelphia. And there's good and bad to that, let's be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
People see that name and they're going to have expectations, and they're probably not realistic. His dad was not only was he a four-time Pro Bowl linebacker, but he was that in a different era where defense was played a different way and you were allowed to be more physical and more intimidating and was actually encouraged to be a bully.
Right.
And that was Jeremiah Trotter Sr. He was a 200.
Stop. Before you consider taking drastic measures to lose weight, like GLP-1 injections, consider Golo. Golo's release is easier than injections and fad diets. No need to jump through insurance hoops. It's simple. You take one release supplement with each meal. Golo's release supplement contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals that target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. With Golo, you follow the Golo for Life plan, where you'll safely and effectively control sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, allowing you to feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. With Golo, you get an effective and affordable weight loss solution that's clinically proven. Because controlling glucose, maintaining healthy insulin levels, and saying goodbye to starvation dieting is the secret to lasting weight loss and wellness. Visit Golo.com to get started today. That's Golo.com. Go to Golo.com to join the 5 million people who have switched to Golo as a better way to lose weight. Visit Golo.com today.
And 60-pound bully. And they don't play football like that anymore. And by the way, to Jeremiah Trotter Jr.'s credit, he knows that. And he knows he had to become a different style of linebacker to make it in the modern NFL. So he's far more athletic than his father, and he's far more gifted when it comes to pass coverage, but it's still not a strength of his. And probably the strengths are he's very instinctive, but unlike his dad, he's undersized because you don't see 260-pound linebackers now. So, what he's got to me, and you made the comparisons, and some people compared him to N'Kobe Dean, and some people compared him to T.J. Edwards, and I'm like, well, that makes no sense because those two aren't similar. But to me, it'd be more closer to N'Kobe than he is T.J., except for the instincts part. because TJ was very instinctual, is very instinctual.
Well, that's why I wonder if it's kind of a mesh of the two. You know, he's a little undersized. He has some of those athletic traits that he's not the most athletic guy, but he is some of the traits that N'Kobe has. And then maybe if you combine the instinctive linebacker nature to him that TJ had so well, maybe you have a hybrid of the two, and that might work.
Maybe. And I think he's got a chance. And again, these are high hopes, and we haven't gotten rookie camp. We got to get through rookie camp.
Haven't even gotten helmets yet.
Yeah. But because of who's in front of him, he's got a chance to play. And if he hits the ground running and he does what he's supposed to do, I think he's got the best opportunity. Honestly, if you even look at the day one and two picks, besides Quinyon Mitchell, I would even argue he's got a better chance to play than certainly Jalix Hunt, who's not going to play. And the Eagles have admitted basically he's a developmental prospect. And even Cooper DeJean, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to play because
there is bodies right where he is.
Yeah. So I think of all the rookies besides Quinyon Mitchell, the first round pick, nobody has a better opportunity. Nobody has an easier path to playing time than Jeremiah Trotter Jr.
Pretty good stuff, though. I mean, from the story perspective. So we'll see how it shakes out. And as you just mentioned, I mean, he does have a path to playing time. I'd love to see him seize that and step up and be the linebacker the Eagle fans have been looking for. John, I want to give you a chance to comment on Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles. You look at the way he does these drafts. I mean, say what you want about the guy for anybody that might not like him or I don't know, you know, he just knows how to read these boards so well. You check a lot of boxes and who they picked, a lot of promise in the day three draft picks, and you walk out with three added picks in next year's draft.
That's the key.
He plays the board so well. I just want to give you a chance to comment and kind of give some insight into how important that part of being a general manager is. I would argue it's underrated, just being able to, and I keep going back to the Cooper DeJean pick. He moves up, he waits, he packages, he goes, and then boom, there's a run on three cornerbacks. I mean, it's just impressive the way he plays the draft.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear people talk about the Eagles draft in the coming days, and they're going to talk about what they get, 9 players, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, they have 9 players. And they're going to talk about good value on day three, as we just did with guys like Shipley and Trotter. And even as you mentioned, Trevor Keane and Dylan McMahon, you're getting, you know, team captains, guys who played a lot of football at the college level, good culture guys. And you're going to hear a lot about the value, and nobody's going to talk about, oh, and he got a third, a fourth, and a fifth for next year.
He'll probably turn those third, fourth, and fifth into another 6 picks.
I remember, for whatever reason, I think there's a demarcation line between Howie 1.0 and Howie 2.0. And I know a lot of the writers that covered Howie 1.0, and he wasn't very good. He was an average general manager, if you wanted to be kind. And now he's arguably the best GM in football, and certainly in the top 5. And I remember a couple of years ago, I said he was top 5. And one of those old guys just attacked me and said, "Oh, you're trying to kiss Howie's ass." And if anybody's listening to me, I just killed Howie for what he did to poor Dave Uram the other day. Sometimes he's an asshole, but I'm also honest, really flipping good at his job, really good at his job. And experience is a huge part of that. And he learned and he learned from his mistakes and was given the opportunity to come back and prove that he learned from those mistakes. And he keeps learning from mistakes.
Yeah, and that's my favorite part of him, that he's not so stuck in his ways. He's been able to, you can just see it in the last 5 years has developed. When he does something wrong, he learns from it, and he corrects it almost immediately. I mean, yeah. Even just Jalen Reagan, now, it feels like it was decades ago. That wasn't that long ago. You know, that was the Jalen Hurts draft, you know, and boom, now we have one of the best wide receiver rooms in the NFL. I love that about Howie, that he knows when to correct himself.
And now, as I often say, to be fair to the other guys, they don't have the same kind of leash. A few do, but very few have the kind of job security that he does. So he can operate with an ease that others cannot. And he can look forward and say, yeah, I'll take a third round pick next year.
Right.
I'll take a you know, this is supposedly not a great draft. Next year's is supposed to be much deeper. And he pushes things back and gets those extra three picks. He'll do that. Another GM who's GMing for his job and is going to get fired if his team doesn't make the playoffs or his team doesn't win the division or his team doesn't show massive improvement, they can't think like that. And they have to do everything in the moment. And when you're doing that, they know they're making mistakes. I guarantee, you know, Minnesota's GM, Denver's GM, and who am I missing? Atlanta's. They know they're on the clock.
Right.
They're not trading picks
for next year. They don't even know if they're going to be there next year.
They know that. And that's why they're acting with desperation. And they're almost crossing their fingers. And it's out of their control because now they have to hand young quarterbacks who probably shouldn't have even have been first round picks, to be honest. They have to take them in the top 12 and they have to cross their fingers and hope their football people can develop them. Now, quarterbacks can develop. Jalen Hurts was the 53rd pick. Brock Purdy was a 7th round pick. It's not impossible. They all have talent. They all have ability, but the odds are against it. And those guys are probably going to be fired inside of 2 years. Howie can operate, I don't want to say without a sense of urgency, because he knows the city he's in. He knows the expectations of this organization now. So you have to win here. But you don't have to. You don't have to operate and say, if I do have a bad end of the season like they did last year, or if I do have a hiccup like they did at the end of the Doug Peterson era, as long as that doesn't turn into a long-term thing, you're going to keep your job. And that's a luxury that he has that others do not.
And one more nod I'll give to Howie Roseman before we quickly just hit on the undrafted guys. We don't need to go too deep into them, but we'll just hit on them briefly. I loved what he did tonight at the start of the press conference. He calls out everybody from behind the scenes and in the back and says, kind of gives them their credit. And we talk a lot about the culture inside the Eagles locker room and inside their organization. And I think that's if nothing else, that inspires a lot of people inside, that makes them feel seen and heard. And I think it makes them feel appreciated, which goes a long way inside a work environment, which I think is a great thing. And I thought that was awesome that he did that.
Yeah, and he's learned on that end as well. I mean, right. One of the last questions he got today was about Jake Rosenberg, who's leaving after the draft. And for people that listen to Birds 365, they've known about Jake for a long time. Big part of this organization, big part of their contract negotiation team, big part of getting those early deals done that everybody raves about.
Right.
And he's leaving the Eagles after the draft. And, you know, some of these things you can't avoid. But I think Howie's learned to, you know, when you do have people that are really good, you know, make them understand that you know how good they are and you know how valuable they are. And they're always going to have ambition. They're always going to, you can't, you know, Jeffrey Lurie got a lot of crap a few years ago when he said he had, I don't know what the number was, but he said 5-6 future GMs in the building. And we all kind of rolled our eyes, to be honest, and chuckled at him. Turns out he probably undersold it.
Yeah.
And it's always a good idea that when you know you have good people, to make them know that you realize they're good at their jobs. And, you know, then maybe you get the benefit of the doubt. Look, anybody who's going to get a GM offer is going to leave. I mean, that's just the way it works. Same thing with Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon. It's not like they didn't like it here. They loved it here.
Right, yeah,
but
right.
They, you know, people have ambition to go higher in their chosen careers. And they leave for better jobs. That's just the nature of this industry. But while they're here, I think he's learned over the years that, you know, give him a pat on the back every once in a while. And he does that all the time now in press conferences. He did it for years with Jake. He does it now with Bryce Johnston. He did it with Andrew Berry before Andrew left. He does it with Adam Berry, his brother, now that he's in the organization. He does it with John Ferrari. He does it with Alec Halaby. And again, he didn't used to do that. So I think he understands it. And he's been thanking people at his post-draft press conference for years. And as he said today, I don't want to miss anybody. So he brought everybody who contributes, and not only the scouting staff and the personnel staff, but everybody from the chefs, everybody who keeps NovaCare running through this, as I said, the 72-hour period that we're basically here for the entire stinking time.
It's balls to the wall, yep.
Yeah, it's an exhausting weekend for us as media people, for them even more. And he's learned to, you know, give his people a pat on the back.
Yeah, so good stuff from Howie Roseman. John, let's go real quick into the undrafted guys. I heard what Howie said about it, where they kind of prioritize those futures contract. And for anybody that's a listener of Birds 365, you were filled in on all of those things. But just what did you make of the undrafted class? Is there any that stuck out? For example, every once in a while you'll hear, I remember just a few years ago, Carson Strong got the most guaranteed money of any undrafted free agent ever. That was somewhat notable, worthy of being noted. Anything that stands out in the undrafted class, anybody you like that you might think could potentially have some sort of role in this football team?
Yeah.
I know it's tough to project, but
I don't even have the undrafted class yet. Even the contracts. I mean, yeah, I came from Howie's press conference right to do this show. So I know there's a couple. They signed the LSU running back and the Georgia running back, excuse me. They signed an LSU safety, I think. I have to look and do more research on those guys. But what Howie did say is that it's the smallest undrafted class he's had. And there's two parts to that. One, as I mentioned with the draft, and I was talking about, to me, it's not about volume. It's about finding difference makers. They're a contender. They don't have a lot of spots open. So the teams, you're going to see teams sign 17, 20 member undrafted draft classes because they need to populate their roster. The Eagles don't need to do that. And there's not a lot of open spots. So that's part of it. And the second part of it, he did sign a group of players. Ty Davis Price, we've mentioned a little bit, former third round pick of San Francisco a couple of years ago. Julian Okwara, who was a third round pick of Detroit, was a really good pass rusher in college. Terrell Lewis was a third round pick, really good pass rusher in college. Kennard, an offensive tackle they signed. So they really, really prioritize futures contracts and trying to find unearth sort of guys who haven't worked out in their original spots, but maybe still are young and still have an upside. Maybe they can connect. But as a whole, that undrafted class, again, if they were a 6-win team, they'd probably have 20 guys. But it's the smallest he said he's done. And it doesn't surprise me at all because they don't have a lot of spots open.
John, I'll end it with this. I'm going to run through real quick the 9 players the Eagles selected this weekend. Round 1, they took Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback out of Toledo. Round 2, they took Cooper DeJean, defensive back out of Iowa. Round 3, they took Jalix Hunt, outside linebacker, edge rusher from Houston Christian. Round 4, pick 127, they took Will Shipley, running back out of Clemson. Round 5, 152, they took Aeneas Smith, wide receiver of Texas A&M. Round 5, 155, they took Jeremiah Trotter Jr., linebacker from Clemson. Round 5, 172, they took Trevor Keegan, guard from Michigan. Round 6, 185, they took Johnny Wilson, wide receiver from Florida State. Round 6, 190, to close it out, they took Dylan McMahon, offensive lineman from NC State. It's April 27th, John. We can only make opinions. We can only speak about where we are right now. I'm not going to ask you to grade the class. I'm not going to ask you to, you know, go deep into that.
B.
The Eagles accomplished.
I always say B.
Did the Eagles accomplish what they wanted to accomplish on paper coming into this week? I know everybody talk, we need defense. We've been talking about it on Bird 365 even. How many more offensive players are they going to sign? Did the Eagles accomplish what on paper, what they wanted to accomplish coming into this draft?
Nobody knows except Howie Roseman, really. A few people know. A few more people know what the actual plan is. Look, nothing. Again, I was telling you, we're here so long. We talk amongst ourselves, all the reporters. Another conversation we had was about all the handshakes and the hugs and the congratulations you see around the NFL and war rooms when somebody drafts somebody. And everybody, there are 32 war rooms excited about what they were able to accomplish in this draft. I don't know. The Eagles don't know if they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish in this draft. Did it unfold the way they expected? That I can tell you 100% no, because it never does. Unless it never does for anybody. As I said, unless you have the number one overall pick, and that's only one pick with the Chicago Bears, the rest of the Bears draft didn't unfold 100% the way they wanted to. It just doesn't work that way. So the best teams are the ones with the best contingencies. History says the Eagles will be among those teams. And as Howie said in that rare moment of crystal clarity when he was asked about the offensive line specifically, yeah, right. I bring that up again. He said, coming into this draft, do you think there's any way you wouldn't have an offensive lineman until the 5th round? And he flat out said, no way. Because it was the deepest offensive line draft in years. He thought he was getting one much earlier. It didn't fall that way. And you have to go with the way the board falls. And that, to me, is a positive sign because he showed discipline. Again, you know, one of the most interesting things I see every year is, and I think I mentioned this on one of our earlier shows, oh, I'm not taking the 7th best offensive tackle over the best cornerback. Well, you damn well better if the 7th best offensive tackle is better than the best cornerback in that year. It has nothing to do. Every position in every draft is not created equal.
Right.
And there were a bunch of tackles in this draft. And the Eagles didn't like every one of them. That wouldn't be prudent either. Because there are certain guys who aren't going to fit your scheme, your system, your coaching philosophy, and all that kind of stuff. But the larger point is you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to shift. You have to be able to go in different directions. And Howie does that better than most. So we'll see how the players shake out. But I think, you know, if you look at it, my first impression, it's a pretty good draft.
I would agree with that, I think. And we talked about it a little bit earlier. You added those three picks next year. I mean, that's icing on the cake to me, you know, with their with the players.
Not even, I count that as a big part of it. It's not even icing to me. I'm like,
that's the cake.
He got nine picks and he got three future picks. He's got a third round pick next year for a fourth round pick this year. And, you know, he did that last year in reverse.
Right.
By the way, he gave up a third round pick to get Kaylee Ringo. You know,
that's right.
Why? Because he thought Kaylee Ringo was a big time prospect. And he thought, we're going to have a really good team. And they weren't quite as good as they thought. But his thought process was our third round pick is going to be at the bottom of the third round. And the odds that you get a prospect like Kaylee Ringo at the bottom of the third round were not good. And he said, yeah, I'll give it up. And now he did it the opposite way. He's just very savvy, very smart GM.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, they were as good as he thought until week 12 happened, right?
Yeah.
Until
week 12. And they still, you know, their third round pick is still deep. So he was right, just not as deep as he would have expected. But you're not getting Kaylee Ringo. People got to see Kaylee Ringo at the end of last year. He is a damn good prospect. And you're probably not getting that prospect at the end of the third round this year.
All right, Johnny Mac, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for checking in today. Thanks for all your work and your contributions to the network. I know it's as you mentioned, it's a long 72 hours. It's a grind being down there and working, especially when Howie's moving and shaking and baking. Get home safe, man, and we'll talk to you again a little bit tomorrow for just a recap of the full draft.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
See you, Johnny Mac. It's John McMullen joining us live from down at NovaCare. Been working hard for Jacob Sports, so as always, we appreciate Johnny Mac. He does awesome work and really my favorite Eagles guy to listen to. And I don't think I'm saying that with any bias. When I talk to Johnny Mac about football, I learn something about football and I learn something about the Eagles, which is what I'm looking for. But I want to hear, I want to go to the chat box and talk to a little bit of the chatters and see what you guys think of the draft. I know there's a lot of commentary going on. I see Paul Mancini checking in. Everybody, Crawley, Twiz is here. SMD is here. We appreciate you guys locking in. You guys have been absolutely awesome on the draft coverage. I mean, the numbers are tremendous. You guys have been loyal, listening, liking, sharing, and subscribing. We appreciate it. As always, keep it locked. Tomorrow, I'm going to try. I saw some people talking about Cilio earlier. I'm going to try and get Dan from the Dan Cave to give us a little segment tomorrow on what he thinks of the draft. I saw him chirping some things already on Twitter. So we'll see what he thinks of it. And if not, he'll be live 2 to 6 come Monday back in his normal slot. And then Johnny Mac and I will do a full draft recap tomorrow. I look at this draft and obviously it's too early to tell. It's too early to grade it. It's too early to see, but I think the Cooper DeJean and the Quinyon Mitchell, I think those two alone, when we approached this draft, we constantly said this team needs defense. They have so much offense. We need a better defense. I think Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, I think they make this defense better. We don't know for sure yet. I know that. But I think they make this defense better, and that makes this football team better, and I think that's a win. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it all plays out. Again, thank you all for checking in. Please like the show on your way out the door. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll have some brief coverage tomorrow, not quite as extensive as today's was with the draft going on, but we appreciate you all being here, all loyal listeners of Jacob Sports, and I appreciate it very much working the scenes, and I'm always reading your guys' chat box. You guys are the best, so we appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for checking in, and we'll talk to you tomorrow to recap the full draft and let it stew overnight and see how we feel when we wake up tomorrow, right? All right, thanks, everybody, for checking in. I'll see you guys tomorrow.